This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 16th of April 2021. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 16th of April, which this week have been edited by Keith and Linda Vincent. Reading today is Nikki Baring.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. And the main headlines this week: City sparks to life as shops reopen, new mum's jury deferral denied, and tributes paid to Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Winchester City Centre has sparked back to life once again. Shops swung open their doors for the first time this year on Monday, whilst pubs and restaurants opened their outdoor seating areas. It took a while for footfall to pick up, at first as visitors were deterred by the poor weather. But by lunchtime, the high street was bustling with queues forming and tables filling up. Councillor Paula Ferguson, Cabinet Member for Local Economy, said it was lovely yesterday to see so many people out and about in Winchester, enjoying being able to visit all our fantastic shops, cafes, pubs and restaurants. With the sun shining and many people enjoying something to eat and drink outside, there was a real buzz in the city again. We do need to remain vigilant, but it does feel like a corner has been turned. Simon Hill, who runs Winchester Framing, which has been in the city for 50 years, said he had had a busy day on Monday. "Oh, it's been lovely to meet with customers again. This lockdown has been tough," he said. "Hopefully it'll be the last one. So far today it's been very good. We've had quite a few customers in. This opening of shops definitely crept up quite quickly too. It was busy first thing this morning, but has since eased off. We are a specialist, so it's not always rammed. But people know where we are, and it's always great to welcome people through the door." One of the biggest queues seen on the day was for Turkish-style barbers in Middlebrook Street, where a number of men were looking to fix their lockdown trims. Dave Barrett, 36, who lives in Winnell, said, "I'm not too fussed about any other shops, but I was desperate to get a haircut. It's about more than looking tidy. It's also about mental health and feeling good about yourself." Speaking on Monday, Dr. Paul Spencer, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, said, "Today's a big day. Many businesses have been reopening again. Shops, personal care premises, hairdressers and beauty salons, indoor leisure facilities, that's gyms and spas, and also self-contained accommodation can open too. Also attractions including outdoor hospitality is reopening. From myself and everyone at Winchester BID, we send out very best wishes to all of the businesses reopening from today." Whilst it was good news for many businesses, being able to welcome back customers, for Debenhams it was the beginning of the end as it opened to sell its leftover stock. The sale continues, but dressing rooms, beauty services and makeovers, bra fitting, click and collect, personal shopper, travel money and in-store order services are unavailable. While the store will be encouraging the use of contactless payment, it will also be accepting cash. The future of the large unit in Winchester High Street is still unknown. The New Look outlet in the Brook Shopping Centre is also permanently closed. Before the pandemic, the store sold exclusively women's clothes. The Chronicle has contacted the press representative for the shopping centre to discuss the future of the store, but awaits a response. And there are pictures of all the people queuing up for the various shops in Winchester and the toy cupboard opening and a long queue for Primark.
New mum's jury deferral denied. A breastfeeding new mum said she has no choice but to take her 8-week-old baby to court after her request to defer jury duty was denied. Zoe Stacey, aged 36, was told giving birth to baby William just 2 months ago is not an excuse not to sit on a jury. She attempted to appeal and change the dates, but was told she'll be expected to turn up to Winchester Crown Court next month. Full-time mum Zoe says she's still breastfeeding, so will have no choice but to bring baby William into the jury box. She said she's understandably unwilling to leave him at home for such a long time due to his young age. The mum of two from Fair Oak, Hampshire, who suffered a number of illnesses after the birth, said, "I breastfed my first son until well after his first birthday, and I plan to do the same with William. Having gone through everything I did on top of breastfeeding, obviously people who choose to feed also have the right to be granted parental leave. Even just being sleep deprived, I wouldn't want people giving a judgment on me in a trial, as it's really difficult to give your focus to anything in that first year. I had to give them several dates within that time frame where I would be prepared to serve for 10 days. I don't want to leave my child for 10 days. A night is the longest I left my other son. We recently relocated from Hertfordshire to Hampshire, and I don't have a massive support system to rely on. I'm just a bit surprised they're pushing it so much. I really thought that being a new parent, and breastfeeding as well, would be grounds for exemption. I can't believe I have to fight for it. I thought there'd be more common sense and compassion. Not only is breastfeeding an issue, I have a child and another 3.5-year-old child. There's also the lockdown and the situation with childcare." Zoe received a letter on April the 2nd, summoning her for jury service on May the 24th. She immediately went online to apply for exemption. Her request was rejected, and she was initially offered the opportunity to defer. But within 10 minutes, she got an email confirming her court date in May at Winchester Crown Court. She said, "There's no consideration. It feels a bit of an automated computer says no, rather than reading what I put in. They just rejected them." The Jury Central Summoning Bureau, part of government, has been asked for a comment. And there's a lovely picture of Zoe with baby William tucked up in a blanket, curled on her lap.
Tributes paid to Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh. Local tributes poured in for Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, following his death at the age of 99 on Friday. The Duke was married to Queen Elizabeth II for more than 70 years and became the longest-serving consort in British history. A statement from Buckingham Palace said, "It is with deep sorrow that Her Majesty the Queen has announced the death of her beloved husband, His Royal Highness the Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh. His Royal Highness passed away peacefully this morning at Windsor Castle." Prince Philip was due to celebrate his 100th birthday on June the 10th this year. Paying tribute, the Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Dr. Tim Dakin, said on Friday, "Today we have lost a great statesman and a beloved member of our royal family. The Duke of Edinburgh will be remembered for his loyalty to his Queen and country. As the senior royal knight of the most noble Order of the Garter, Prince Philip led others in exemplifying everything the Garter stood for in terms of outstanding service to the nation. This is a great loss for the country, the whole Commonwealth, and above all for Her Majesty and the royal family. My thoughts and prayers are with them all." HM Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, Esquire, said, "We have learned with great sorrow and profound grief the sad news of the death of His Royal Highness, which will be felt keenly across the nation and beyond. At the Hampshire headquarters of the Hampshire Lieutenancy and Hampshire County Council in Winchester, flags have been lowered to half-mast." Leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Keith Manns, said, "Hampshire County Council extends our deepest sympathies to the royal family following the very sad news of the death of His Royal Highness, the Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh. Our country has great pride in its royal associations, with a strong history of connections to the monarchy. Over the years, Hampshire has had the privilege of welcoming His Royal Highness on many visits to our county, and we now remember with warmth and fondness these treasured memories." Winchester City Council leader Lucille Thompson said, "It is with great sadness that I heard the news that His Royal Highness the Duke of Edinburgh has died. Prince Philip has dedicated his life to our country, and we are all immensely grateful to him for his service over so many years." The Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, County Council Chairman and County Council leader laid flowers outside Winchester's Great Hall on Saturday. Wreaths were also laid at the cathedral. And we have several pictures, one of the wreaths being laid inside Winchester Cathedral, and of the royal newlyweds, very young, him very handsome, her smiling, obviously so happy, and a picture on their wedding day. He was really very good looking and she looks beautiful. Past the Duke with General Sir Mike Jackson at the Adjutant's General Corps Museum. And also a picture of the Duke of Edinburgh visiting Winchester College in 1982.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. And now we continue with the death announcements, Christian comment, letters, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Bedford. Madeline Joan Bedford, who died peacefully on the 23rd of March, aged 77. Chris. Peter David. Chris, who died on the 2nd of April, aged 79. Davies. Audrey Louise Davies died peacefully on the 31st of March after a long illness, aged 84. Evans. John Graham Evans, CBE, died on the 2nd of April, aged 90. Finn. Peter Finn died on the 17th of March, aged 85. Halliwell. William Halliwell died in Winchester on the 5th of April. Kingshot. Sue Kingshot died peacefully on the 4th of April. Makewell. Thelma Elizabeth Makewell died peacefully on the 3rd of April after a short illness, aged 81. And Sylvester. Robert Stanley Sylvester died peacefully on the 27th of March, aged 90. And now we have Christian comment, please, Nikki.
Which is headed, Shared Joys, Shared Lament. Christ is risen. Alleluia. Spring is here. There is blossom and bright daffodils and all manner of nature's glory to give us hope and signs of new life. As I write, I am looking at the glorious Cornish blue sea and sky. We are allowed to travel, so we have. The shops are opening, pub gardens, walks in the park, seeing friends and family, reunions and the joy of seeing loved ones again. Yet, as we know, there is still death, as we are reminded in the news, not only in the royal family, but among our own loved ones and people we do not know. But their plight moves us, people we see on the news. We live in a world which is groaning, living between creation and the end times, when we shall all be one and suffering will be over. We shall be safely home. God will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be anguish, nor grief, nor pain any more. That's Revelations 21:4. What shall we do until then? How do we cope with these in-between times, the only times we know when we have joy and then we suffer? Our Queen, some years ago, said, "The price of love is grief, when we lose someone." She and her family are living that now, as are so many families, and especially those who have had to grieve alone and have not been able to share their lament with their friends and family. Still, we have restraints on funerals, weddings and reunions. Our joys and sorrows are influenced by the pandemic and we have to find ways of coping. Shared joys, shared lament, these are the ways of humans and always have been. I heard something the other day that in some cultures, unless a marriage takes place with all family and friends in shared celebration, it is not really valid. So we should comfort each other as best we can in grief and sorrow. There are ways. We have become practiced at them in the last year. Many have developed a new resilience in these times. We can certainly continue to share joy in our slow release from lockdown. We are always ingenious at sharing happiness. Whatever we choose, two things are important. Firstly, that we help each other, comfort each other, and rejoice together. That makes us community and family, and even small gestures and words can be a big help. Secondly, that we remember that the message of Easter is that the gates of heaven have been opened for us. This, now, is all temporary, even when it doesn't feel like it, and the world is a different place. There will be a day of eternal rejoicing, and we shall all be equal, all as one, and we shall see our God face to face. And that was written by Liz Tatham.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. And the first couple of letters relate to the statue of Greta Thunberg at the university. And the first one is from Carolyn Bullen, in Stanmore, and it's entitled Mammon. Sir, we are expected to believe that the Greta statue represents the university's commitment to sustainability. Can this be the same organisation that chops down mature trees and covers open spaces with concrete and steel constructions? Is this the same educational establishment that has so enormously expanded its business in recent years that the town is now swamped with students so that locals have nowhere to live? Presumably more bums on seats means greater revenues for the college exchequer, but the result has been proposals like Royal Down and the council cramming more so-called affordable housing, they're not, onto every scrap of land they own. The uni appears to absolve themselves of the activities of their students. They do not discourage them from bringing cars into the city despite the pollution problems we are told about, and the students themselves seem unconcerned about rampant consumerism if the piles of empty bottles, takeaway cartons and mail order boxes left littering the outside of the houses of multiple occupancy in this area are anything to judge by. Clearly the sustainability message has not got through to them. I wonder how Greta Thunberg feels, if she's ever even been asked, about her bronze effigy being placed outside a monolithic construction devoted, it seems to me, to mammon and hypocrisy. And that letter's from Carolyn Bullen, Battery Hill, Stanmore, Winchester.
And this from John Miller. More Greta. Sir, I was astonished to read that it is the younger generation who are objecting to the beautiful statue of Greta Thunberg, just erected on the Winchester University campus. She has been such an inspiration to all of us and a shining example to her contemporaries, progressing from her solo protest at her school to an international figure honoured by her personal appearance at the UN headquarters. Had I still been running the Winchester Festival, I would have moved heaven and earth trying to bring her to the site of her statue and ask her how she had achieved so much in her short life. I would appeal to the Students' Union to reconsider their rejection of such a great example to the world. John Miller, Alsford Road, Bishop Sutton.
And this letter from Edward Fennell, Egbert Road, Hyde, headed William Cobbett. So I write in response to George Mann's letter, which was chronicled last week, regarding the decision not to proceed with the proposed William Cobbett Bicentenary Programme, in which I was principally involved. First, let me be clear, I'm a great admirer of Cobbett's writing about Hampshire, and also respect many, but by no means all, of his political campaigns. The problem we had with rural rides, however, is that scattered throughout it are gratuitous anti-Semitic and other racist comments. Given that we wish to involve public bodies, the local universities and others in the bicentenary programme, this prompted an entirely necessary exercise in due diligence to examine more closely Cobbett's expressed views, both on Jewish people and on slavery. Sadly, this due diligence unearthed further writing by Cobbett, which is profoundly offensive and hateful, notably his extended essay Good Friday 1830. It revealed that his anti-Semitism was not of a casual kind. It was part of his fixed and frankly fanatical view of society. Indeed, it's no exaggeration to say that what was written by Cobbett in the 1830s was repeated in Germany in the 1930s, and to some extent by some members of the Labour Party in the last decade. Meanwhile, as the historian Arthur Scheer comments about Cobbett's time in America, his Porcupine's Gazette preached a pro-slavery argument, a coarse, inchoate racism rare in the public prints. On this basis, I think it was the right decision not to proceed with a major celebration of Cobbett's work. However, this is not in any way to suggest that people should stop reading Rural Rides for the fascinating insights which Cobbett gives into local life 200 years ago. And that's from Edward Fennell, Egbert Road, Hyde, Winchester.
And from Terry Gould, headed Silver Hill. Sir, Judith Martin's letter makes some excellent points about progressing this very tardy development. I disagree, however, about her suggestion of retaining the old Friars Gate surgery building. That corner of the development has been earmarked in the SPD for an open green space park to together with opening up the lower brook to form a lovely streamside walk to the Broadway. The City Council has already set a deadline to achieve carbon neutrality, and a city centre's green space, water and trees are essential to achieving this goal. Perhaps the two buildings at the corner of Friars Gate and Tanner Street could be rescued and reused if joined by a well-landscaped covered patio, plenty of space inside. And please don't waste any more money on King's Walk. Just demolish it and open up the Antiques Market to create a lovely entry to Silver Hill. Please just find a good master planner to do a plan for the whole of Walled Winchester and of Silver Hill. Demolish the Friars Gate surgery, open up the Lower Brook, plant lots of trees along it, and above all, really get the development started. And that's from Terry Gould, Fairfield Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this letter from Councillor Martin Todd says, lay the blame. So Mr Black is right to say that council tax for Winchester residents is going up by around 4.7%, but wrong to say that the Liberal Democrats are responsible. If he looks more carefully at his bill, he will see that 75% of the increase comes from the Conservative-controlled County Council. 19% comes from the Conservative-controlled Police and Crime Commissioner precept and Fire and Rescue precept, and only 7% of the increase from Liberal Democrat-controlled City Council and Town Forum. While the City Council is increasing Band D council tax by £4.25, the fourth lowest in the county, the County Council is increasing its council tax by £64.17. Mr Black has every right to be unhappy about his council tax increase, but if he wants to be unhappy with the party responsible for more than 90% of the increase, he needs to be unhappy with the Conservative Party. And that's Councillor Martin Todd, Lloyd Lindsay Square, Winchester.
And from Rob Jordan, member of the Cycle Winchester team, headed Cycling Charter. Sir, in response to the letter from Dr Michael Bennett, Chronicle April 8, I'm delighted that he welcomes the Winchester Cycling Charter and thinks that cycling must be a major part of the solution to climate change. Regarding his reading of the photograph, I doubt that many will see it as an ideal family outing. I applaud the family for making a positive, healthy transport choice, but the nose-to-tail cars and lack of separated cycle lane highlight why this is not a more common sight. At Cycle Winchester, the organisation that launched the charter, we are indeed aware that it is non-cyclists we need to consider. Increasing the number who choose to cycle requires enablement, not just encouragement. Happily, we have good new national standards for cycle infrastructure, launched last year under the Gear Change Initiative. Painted white lines are out. Separation is in. The challenge is to ensure that our local authorities embrace the guidance provided by central government and build good quality cycle routes to enable the shift from car to bike. Winchester Cycling Charter remains open for signatures at winchestercyclingcharter.org.uk. And that's from Rob Jordan, member of the Cycle Winchester team, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
And another letter on the subject of cycling. Cyclists, be more aware of others, says Elizabeth McKenzie. So the rules for overtaking at sea or on the highway are clear. Keep clear. What about cyclists overtaking pedestrians on shared paths? Sustrans suggests cyclists should give way to pedestrians. At this time, when more of us are walking and cycling and plans are afoot to close roads permanently to other traffic for the benefit of cyclists, how about the same being considered for pedestrians on shared paths? I walk nearly every day, often on shared paths in Winchester. I have too often experienced a cyclist approaching swiftly, silently, and far too close for my comfort. Yesterday they were so close I could hear the sharp intake of breath as I stepped 6 inches to my right and they nearly hit me. Now I have a good hearing. What about those who do not? Please would all cyclists either ring a bell or call out a greeting well before overtaking, because we walkers may need time to recall our dogs or our toddlers. To end on a positive note, thank you for all those who've given me sufficient warning. To you I wish happy cycling. And that's from Elizabeth McKenzie, Thurmond Road, Stanmore, Winchester.
and from Bruce Ridweller, headed Problem Solved. Sir, in your article, Beauty Spot Car Parks May Close Due to Dog Walkers, Chronicle April 1st, you assert that professional dog walkers are using Farley Mount against the current lease terms, creating problems for other users. I mentioned this to a 10-year-old recently, and they came up with a simple solution which enables the car parks to stay open. Put up signs at the car park stating that professional dog walking is not allowed, and requesting other users of the car park to photograph any vehicles of professional dog walkers and send the evidence to the appropriate authority for them to prosecute. And that's from Bruce Ridweller, Downside Road, Tegdown, Winchester.
And another one on parking at Farley Mount from Geoffrey Moody. So your article on Farley Mount, Beauty Spot Car Parks May Close Due to Dog Walkers, evokes memories of many visits with my teenage friends, either by hiking or cycling, complete with our packed lunches. We rarely saw more than a dozen persons there, and cars were an exception. The current problems arising through car parking and dog walkers will not be easily resolved. It would take goodwill, sensible and practical proposals from interested parties to come to an acceptable solution to ensure that Farley Mount retains its uniqueness. And that's from Geoffrey Moody, Harrietsham in Kent.
And from Charles Hobbs, headed No Better. Sir, John Hearn should be ashamed of himself, Chronicle April 8. It is bad enough that you have regular car-hating correspondents writing in from comfortable city centre addresses. It's bad enough that the county and city councils have used the COVID epidemic as an opportunity to remove traffic from Hyde, where I believe some of its members happen to live, to the detriment of many others. But as an expert, former major developments officer, John Hearn ought to know better. Winchester's city population includes many thousands of families living in outlying communities who depend upon the city centre just as much as those living in walking distance or close enough to have a frequent bus service. I often need to travel into the city very early in the morning or in the evening or during the day for a brief domestic need, and regrettably, personal transport is the only available method. It would be a lovely idea to turn the city into a sunlit, all-dancing plaza, so long as all its citizens are included in the plan. So, factor in the cost of providing all of us outlying ratepayers with two to three buses an hour, over an 18-hour day, or say, halving our rates burden so we could afford to frequent Salisbury or Southampton instead. Which of these is more likely to happen? So, please, 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 experts and others with great ideas, remember that accessible, affordable, short-term car parking in the city centre will continue to be essential for a big chunk of Winchester's residents. Do not lock us out. And that's from Charles Hobbs, Downlands Way, South Wanston.
That concludes the letter, so now we have the Chronicle editorial comment. And it's headed, The Duke, The High Street, and a jury. This week has been one of the rebirths, new life and death. We salute the Duke of Edinburgh, a man who gave selfless services to this country for more than 70 years, and a fairly frequent visitor to Winchester. There was the reopening of scores of shops on the High Street after a closure of around 3 months, but which seemed much, much longer. This newspaper's Safe and Open campaign, as is outlined in the paper, aims to help boost the businesses that make Winchester such a special place. And then there's the highly unusual issue of the young mother who's been called for jury service. She says she has no means of alternative childcare and so will have to take her baby into the jury box for the duration of the proceedings. In recent times, the courts have been determined to have a broader mix of people doing this fundamental civic duty, and that's to be welcomed. But it does seem to be taking things too far when a situation like this can arise. Surely the jury service can be deferred to a more suitable time? And now we have first person, please, sir.
Headed My Strength and Stay, and that's Ron Allison. I have written before in the column of the privileges and pleasures that come with working for Her Majesty the Queen as a member of the royal household. They were indeed many, but none, apart from serving the Queen herself, meant more than working with the Duke of Edinburgh, the man she described as my strength and stay. A man with a huge intellectual curiosity, Prince Philip had the happy knack of getting the best out of those who worked with him, always by setting the highest standards for himself. There must be many who describe the Duke as an inspiration. Certainly there are thousands who benefited through involvement in his award scheme, which he introduced in 1956, and which to so many became a significant part of growing up. His other passion was conservation, and in this he was truly ahead of his time. He has himself described being in a position without precedent when his wife became queen. He was a consort, but did not wish to be known as the prince consort. Rather, he committed himself to serving and supporting the monarchy. By being actively involved and always well briefed, he was able to contribute significantly to the life of the country, as well as helping to keep the monarchy refreshed and relevant. How best to describe Prince Philip? A man of many talents? Most definitely. A man of wit and sound common sense? Undoubtedly. A totally dedicated husband and father? Just ask the family. A colleague of utter reliability? Check with those who worked with him. All would answer yes. In my time as the Queen's press secretary, I well knew that Prince Philip did not always view the media with complete approval, but we always knew where we were with him. There was no room for interpretation when he expressed his thoughts. And much to my relief, he did not view the Royal Press Secretary as personally responsible for every word printed or broadcasted. I thoroughly appreciated my years working with him. May I say that to serve the Queen and her family was both immensely enjoyable and thoroughly worthwhile. No one would be surprised to read that I support the monarchy, that I believe our system works well for us, and that in the turbulent century in which we are living, we should be grateful for it. It has been tremendously to our advantage that a man such as the Duke has been at the very centre of our lives for so long. As the range of his interests and his varied contributions to life in the Commonwealth have been highlighted in recent obituaries, they were not always so sufficiently acknowledged in his lifetime. In addition, there have been numerous instances of small personal acts of kindness which until now were known only to those involved. All of this provides a glimpse of the many facets of the man I knew. As the Queen has been blessed in their marriage, so have we for many years enjoyed his wise and considerate leadership. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Now we have Belgarum, an alternative look at the news, just a single item this week. And it says, floral crosses adorn three city centre churches. The three central Winchester churches of St Lawrence with St Swithin and St Bartholomew's marked the season of Lent by installing a wooden cross outside each of the churches in the United Benefice. At first, the crosses were bare, but over Easter, the crosses were dressed with seasonal flowers. For Easter, the churches were closed, but each cross was adorned to celebrate the risen Christ. The Reverend Karen Cousef, priest in charge and area dean of Winchester, said the churches wanted to find a way to witness the true meaning of Easter and offer an Easter blessing to the people of the city in a different way. Tom Nell, a member of St Lawrence with St Swithin Parochial Church Council, came up with the idea of putting a large wooden cross on the outside of each church. Between Palm Sunday and Good Friday, they stood as stark reminders to passers-by of the solemnity of the events we were recalling when Jesus' triumphant welcome into Jerusalem quickly turned into betrayal, trial, crucifixion and burial. Then, on Holy Saturday, teams of flower arrangers decorated the crosses so that for Easter Day they were bursting with colour and life. The Reverend Karen said, "After such a difficult year, we wanted to offer the people of the city a symbol of the great message of the risen Christ at Easter, that beyond darkness there is light, and beyond death there is life." Lots of people have been sharing images on social media, particularly of the one at St Swithin upon Kingsgate, and have let us know what a wonderful and uplifting sight they found it. This is the first time these churches have done anything like it, and I'm certain it won't be the last. And there are three pictures of the three different churches with their crosses, very, very plain crosses underneath, but beautifully adorned with seasonal flowers lot of colour and very beautifully decorated. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 16th of April at 6:09 a.m, begins at 8:02 p.m, and on Wednesday the 21st of April it ends at 5:59 a.m and begins at 8:10 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki.
Headed, Winchester City is COVID-free. The city of Winchester is COVID-free for the first time in many months. The last place in the city with cases was Winchester West, the area which includes Full Flood and Week, but that has changed. The latest information relating to COVID-19 was updated on Tuesday afternoon and reports only three other cases in two other parts of the district: Whiteley, Knowle and Wickham, and Denmead and Southwick, with just three cases each in the 7 days to April the 8th, the most recent day for which localised figures are available. 12 other areas have reported fewer than three cases in those 7 days and are now marked white on the government map. It is not possible to say how many new cases have been reported in Hampshire and Winchester District in the last week, as recent figures have been adjusted downwards. The reason is unclear. But the recent steady decline in Winchester has stalled. The Press Association National News Agency reported that figures to April 7th show only 107 places out of 315 in the UK with a better record than Winchester, and an increase from 27 on April the 3rd. No deaths have been reported by the National Health Service in Hampshire on Monday and Tuesday. The death roll in Winchester District of 183 has been the same for 42 days. The number of COVID deaths in the three hospitals of the Hampshire Hospitals Trust, RHCH, Basingstoke and Andover, remains at 438, with no deaths for 26 days. There are only 9 COVID patients in Basingstoke Hospital, 3 in RHCH and none in Andover, 1 down from on last week, which was 13.
New leisure centre will open next month. Winchester's new state-of-the-art leisure centre is set to welcome users for the first time next month. Everyone Active announced on Tuesday that the new Winchester Sport and Leisure Park will open on Saturday, May the 29th. Visitors will benefit from a wide range of accessible facilities at the centre, including a 50-metre swimming pool and a learner pool, multi-use sports hall, 200-station fitness suite and spinning studio, 2 exercise studios, 4 squash courts, a crush cafe and a hydrotherapy suite. Alison Norman, Everyone Active Area Contract Manager, said, "We're extremely proud and excited to announce that the centre will open on May the 29th. We're looking forward to welcoming local residents to this spectacular facility, which has something on offer for everyone, whether you're a keen swimmer, enjoy squash, or want to try out a new exercise class." Work started at the Garrison Ground in March 2019.
And I have a news roundup. It's recycling bins. Sainsbury's say it is tackling the overspill at its bottle banks at its superstore at Badger Farm. Last week, the Chronicle reported the excess bottles, cardboard and bin bags dumped at the recycling facilities. One shopper said, "The new bins are already full to bursting, despite only having just installed. It's clearly not enough to meet the need." Sainsbury's spokesperson said the recycling service at our Badger Farm store recently reopened and has been in high demand. The area around the bins has been cleared and we have introduced additional collections. And the second item was footpath repair. Footpaths across the county are set to be restored thanks to a £500,000 investment. Hampshire County Council has announced that investment to repair the most popular paths. The funding was approved at Councillor Edward Heron's decision meeting and comes after months of wet weather and an increase in visits during the COVID-19 pandemic. The repairs will take place over the next 6 months, prioritising popular routes that have been most affected by wet conditions and increased use, as well as areas in sensitive habitats. The Council is currently finalising the details.
Petition to make roads safer amidst underpass fears. Campaigners battling to make a Winchester road safer and more accessible have handed in their petition to a civic chief. Residents want improvements at Oliver's Battery Road and have gathered 309 signatures in an online petition. They say the underpass is barely usable and action needs to be taken to make the junction make safer the junction with Badger Farm Road. Norma Goodwin, Julia Stoll, Lucinda Graham and Max Priestman presented the petition to County Councillor Rob Humby. Mr Priestman, who lives nearby at Oliver's Battery Road South, is the Green Party candidate at the forthcoming City Council elections. The petition includes suggested improvements, which are speed reduction to 20 miles an hour, remove the steps on the southern entry to the underpass, or if impossible due to the gradient, consider closing and refilling the underpass to create more space for a safe junction, build a traffic light junction or roundabout with priority for cyclists and public transport, create a bus lane from the Sainsbury's to the Pitt roundabout westwards and better turning for buses into Oliver's Battery, and enable easy cycle routes along Oliver's Battery Road, down Badger Farm Road to Sainsbury's and down the Ridgeway to St Cross. Councillor Humby thanked the group and agreed to look at required changes to promote more sustainable transport solutions, encourage active forms of travel and reduce car journeys. Mr Priestman welcomed the shift of focus towards people's needs of their health and well-being, as well as taking action to limit climate change. While the measures included in the Active Travel Fund are linked to short-term goals subject to the ongoing pandemic, there is a greater need to find better alternatives for the public to travel to Winchester from surrounding villages and towns, he said. Therefore, changes to Badger Farm Road junctions are desperately needed. Since its construction, Badger Farm Road has divided Oliver's Battery and has contributed to the shift towards car use. And there's a photograph of the very busy junction with vehicles queuing to come out. There's a photograph of the underpass built in the 1970s with steps leading down and, as I said, not user-friendly. And, of course, there's a photograph of them handing in the petition to Councillor Ron Humby.
Trampled puppy saved by vets. A dog owner has relived the heart-stopping moment when she feared her new puppy had been trampled to death by a horse. Lucinda Lighting has a Hursley vet to thank for saving her pet's life. She was out walking with children, William and Molly, and their puppy, Daisy, when the incident happened. After three-month-old Daisy, a rescue dog, suddenly strayed into a field of horses, Lucinda found her puppy lying motionless and raced to her local vets, who swiftly referred her to Anderson Moore's veterinary specialist in Poles Lane. Lucinda recalled, "My children had run forward to pet some horses, which were in a field alongside the path. Daisy ran after the children, but carried on through the post and rail fence and into the field. Almost immediately, one of the horses started to chase her and trampled all over her, kicking her in the head in the process. It was such a traumatic moment. I was crying, the children were hysterical, and Daisy was just lying motionless. I slipped through the fence and ran towards her. When I picked her up, I was convinced she was dead. It was so scary." Bruno Lopez, one of the residents in veterinary neurology and neurosurgery at Anderson Moores, took charge of Daisy's care. A CT scan of her head, neck, chest and abdomen showed multiple fractures to the back of her skull, although fortunately these fractures did not appear displaced or to be causing any compression of Daisy's brain. And there's a charming picture of Daisy, who is sort of a Jack Russell, with little black face and black and white patches and one ear that flops down. Very sweet.
Backlog of cases at City Law Courts. Winchester Crown Court is facing an increasing backlog of cases, figures show. A parliamentary report has warned that coronavirus has left the court system in England and Wales in crisis, with a backlog of cases that will take years to clear. Ministry of Justice figures show that Winchester Crown Court had 275 outstanding cases at the end of December, an increase of 3% from the end of September, and 20 more than at the end of 2019, when there were 255. The Lords Constitution Committee has urged the government to set out urgent plans, including new funding, to stop public confidence in the justice system being undermined. Across England and Wales, the number of outstanding Crown Court cases swelled to over 56,000 in December, up 11% from September, and 49% higher than the same point the previous year. However, the number of concluded cases in December was close to pre-pandemic levels, as courts get closer to be able to clear the national backlog. The figures also show that 148 cases were concluded at Winchester Crown Court between October and December. That was a rise of nearly 30% on the 114 cases dealt with between July and September. Between October and December 2019, 166 cases were concluded. Last month, the watchdog for the Crown Prosecution Service warned that the caseload for prosecutors is increasing at an alarming rate, and this could have major consequences for victims and witnesses. Meanwhile, some lawyers have said they're already seeing trials being listed for 2023. Bar Council Chairman Derek Sweeting QC said, "With an end to social distancing in sight, the government needs to seize the opportunity to allow the courts to deal with as many cases as possible by investing in more court capacity, more court staff, and adequate sitting days."
App reveals unsafe streets. A new safety app has highlighted areas in Winchester that are deemed high crime zones to help keep residents safe. The WalkSafe app alerts users when they enter a high crime zone and has surged in popularity in the wake of Sarah Everard's murder. The map pinpoints reports of crime taken from monthly police reports in the area, including sexual assault, mugging and knife crime. WalkSafe visualises crime reports which have been published by the police so you can plan your route more safely and effectively. Its HomeSafe function estimates how long it should take you to get somewhere and alerts a loved one if your journey doesn't go to plan. The TapSafe function allows you to send a contact your location details. WalkSafe automatically alerts you when you walk near an area with any reported crime and helps you to divert your route. The app is free and there are no in-app purchases. Each coloured dot seen on the map represents a different crime. Red means violence, sexual assault. Black means knife crime. Light blue means feeling unsafe. And yellow means mugging. The colours on the TapSafe feature will change depending on the time of day, allowing for discreet use at night time, reducing the risk of alerting a potential attacker. There were 49 roads in Winchester where crimes were reported on the app, including Station Hill, Clifton Road, Staple Gardens and St Peter Street, where incidents of sexual assault or violence was reported. In the whole of the district, four streets were reported for knife crime. These were Mews Lane, Woodfield Drive, Winton Close and Taplings Close.
Death of ex-councillor who did lots for the community. A former Winchester City councillor who did lots for the community died after a fall, an inquest heard. Bruce Warland, aged 79, lived with his wife at their Benenden Green home in Alsford for many years. On June the 30th, he fell down the stairs of the property and was taken to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. And 1 month later, on August the 3rd, he was pronounced dead. A post-mortem report by consultant pathologist Dr. Adnan Al-Badri states the cause of death as severe pneumonia. Speaking at the inquest in Winchester, his daughter Julia Hibbert said, "Dad was a very well-educated man. He didn't attend university but studied on the Open University and had a degree in marine engineering. He met Mum whilst working out at sea for Shell on an oil tanker, but left when Mum had my brother Mark as he didn't want to be away at sea anymore. He was very much a family man. He was always very supportive, very caring, and did lots for the community as a parish councillor and later a city councillor. That's in the 80s and 90s. During his retirement, Mr. Warland, who has seven grandchildren, volunteered at a local primary school to support pupils with their mathematics. In 2016, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. He was very mobile in his old age, but did have dementia, continued Mrs. Hibbert. He didn't want to acknowledge his memory issues, but Mum and I pushed for him to get a diagnosis. Area Coroner Jason Pegg concluded the inquest as an accidental death. He said, "I have no doubt whatsoever that you, the family, have some very fond memories with Mr. Warland." There's a postscript to this article saying why we cover inquests. Many families can be shocked or upset to find the press in attendance at their loved one's inquest. But the press, along with members of the public, are legally allowed to attend and have done for more than 100 years. Coroner's courts are courts of law, and reports of these are covered by something called absolute privilege. This means that a press report can contain any details given in open court, so long as the report is fair, accurate, and contemporaneous account of those proceedings. We are regulated by IPSO, and the guidelines state that reporting on inquests must be done with sensitivity.
Police evict travellers from Park and Ride. Police have used specially authorised powers to move on a group of travellers following reports of antisocial behaviour. The group, comprising of 19 caravans and 25 vehicles, set up at the Winchester South Park and Ride off Otterbourne Road on Sunday, April 11th. Inspector John Stribley authorised a Section 61 order, having undertaken a full review of the circumstances and reports of antisocial behaviour and environmental damage. Hampshire Constabulary will always ensure that we balance the needs of all our communities when using these powers, said Inspector Stribley. Our actions must be proportionate, lawful and necessary. I hope our swift action to move unauthorised encampments from unsuitable locations will convey to all sections of the community that a robust approach will be taken against encampments within the legal parameters. We will continue to work closely with partner agencies and private landowners to manage unauthorised encampments and identify and deal with any issues of disorder or criminality. The direction was issued at 1 p.m. on Monday, April the 12th, for the group to move on, and they have since left.
Election 2021, Super Thursday. It will be Winchester's version of a US-style Super Thursday on May the 6th, when at least three separate elections will be held on the same day. City council seats will be up for grabs, along with county council divisions, the election for the Police and Crime Commissioner, and in some places, parish council elections. The City Council and Police and Crime Commissioner polls were postponed from last May because of the first COVID-19 lockdown. There will also be a by-election in St Michael Ward in Winchester. The elections will be different this year, with plans to ensure that electors can cast their vote in a COVID-safe way. People will still be able to vote at polling station and also by post and by proxy. Several councillors are standing down. Some had been flagged some time ago, notably Lisa Griffiths, Conservative in Alresford. But several well-known names are also leaving. Jackie Porter in the Worthies is a surprise, as she's the cabinet member overseeing the new local plan. Public consultations on the plan closes on April the 12th. The new proposal of Royal Down and the continuing issue of Micheldever Newtown has kept it in the spotlight in recent weeks. Rob Humby, Conservative, is stepping down from his City Council seat in Bishops Waltham. He remains Deputy Leader of Hampshire County Council and is contesting Bishops Waltham. Liz Hutchinson, Lib Dem, is not contesting St Paul Ward, and former Mayor Eleanor Bell is retiring in Oliver's Battery and Badger Farm. Another ex-Mayor, Dominic Hiscock, a City Councillor since 1999, is not contesting St Bartholomew's Ward, but is standing again in the County Council division of Winchester Eastgate. Councillor Hiscock said, "I decided before the cancelled election last year, when my term was up, that I would take the opportunity to stand down from the City Council after 21 years. I felt it was time for me to move on, and there are some very good younger people waiting to take over from me." There's a by-election in St Michael Ward following the resignation last year of Kim Gottlieb. Councillor Bell said, "I'd always intended to step down at the end of my current term, which coincided with the end of my mayoral year in 2019-2020. And at the county council election in Meon Valley, Roger Huckstep, the sitting councillor, has been replaced by Hugh Lumby, who is also a city councillor.
News in brief. Warning of break-ins to garages. Residents have been warned after a spate of break-ins to garages and sheds. Garages and sheds have recently been broken into in the Winchester district. Overnight, on Saturday, police have also received reports of outbuildings being targeted in Twyford and Shawford. Now officers have been going house to house to reassure homeowners in these areas. They are also advising residents to fit alarms, mark items with postcodes, make sure strong locks, padlocks, door hinges or other security devices are fitted. Remember to lock garages or sheds after use and not to store large quantities of valuables in garages and sheds. Keep property and fencing in good repair. A police spokesman said 999 should only be used in emergency situations when a life is in danger or a crime is happening right now. To speak to the police about anything else, you should call 101 or contact us online. A spokesperson for Colden Common Neighbourhood Watch added, a number of residents now have CCTV. It may be useful to review the footage each morning to see if they have picked up anything out of the usual over the previous evening or night. If you are a cyclist and use Strava, please check your privacy settings. As always, be aware of what you post on social media platforms.
City Council unaware of misuse. Winchester Civic Chiefs say they are unaware of alleged misuse of parking permits by university students near the campus. Last week, the Chronicle reported residents living in Sleepers Dell Gardens complaining about students parking in their road, creating a traffic hazard. In a letter to the Chronicle, they said, "It's clear students are misusing the residents-only parking permits." A City Council spokesperson said, "Winchester City Council is not aware of any fraudulent use of permits at Sleepers Dell Gardens. We continue to enforce car parking restrictions and we would encourage any residents to raise a complaint with our customer support teams if they suspect permits are being used illegally."
Project could create Space Age Hospital. A Hampshire programme is backing a multi-million pound drive to design a hospital of the future. The UK Space Agency has launched a £5 million drive in collaboration with the Hampshire Together programme. The government has invited the UK's world-leading innovators to help design a new space-age hospital that could use technologies and techniques pioneered on missions to Mars or the International Space Station to help treat patients and make life easier for the NHS staff. Up to £5 million of UK Space Agency funding is available to support a joint initiative with the Hampshire Together, modernising our hospitals and health service programme. The programme is part of the government's health infrastructure plan, which includes the provision of 40 new hospitals in England by 2030. The space-enabled services could be inspired by a whole range of activities and technologies pioneered by the UK's growing space sector, which currently contributes nearly £15 billion to GDP and supports 42,000 jobs. They might include new diagnostic tools, improve logistics by tracing goods or using drones, improving hospital parking or better patient reach using tele-rehabilitation or care. Tony Mears, Associate Director of Innovation for the Hampshire Together programme, said, "We are delighted to be working with the UK Space Agency as part of our programme. It opens up new opportunities for us in terms of innovation and technology and shows our commitment to incorporating new ideas into our plans for the future." The call for space-inspired ideas is supported by the European Space Agency's Space Solutions through its Business Applications programme, in which the UK is a leading investor. The successful projects, which could be new ideas or using technology that already exists in a different way to support healthcare, will then be incorporated in any new facility as well as the wider health system. And there's a wonderful photograph of a sort of proposed space-age hospital, all very modern, of course, but the bed, it looks, how can I describe it? It doesn't look like any sort of hospital bed you've ever seen. It's sort of on three wheels and it's got very modern and open windows and it's got a sort of a doctor that isn't a doctor. It's projected onto a screen. I can't think how to say that. I can't think what the word is. But anyway, let's hope we get it.
Memorial to wartime tragedy almost complete. A memorial to three RAF Spitfire pilots killed in a wartime training accident has almost been completed. The new lectern-like memorial is on a country lane near Alresford to commemorate the deaths of Flight Lieutenant H.W. Adams, Flight Sergeant J.G.L. Hughes and Flight Lieutenant B. Lees, who were killed in June 1944. The pilots were from 26th Squadron based at Lee on the Solent and operating in an army cooperation role over Normandy shortly after D-Day. The memorial includes a QR code that, when downloaded to a smartphone, has eyewitness Stan Upton, then just 14 years old, giving an account of the accident at Folly Hill at Abbotstown Down. The memorial has been commissioned by Alresford Historic and Literary Society, whose chairman Glenn Gilbertson commented that as the wartime generation pass away, it's more important than ever that there are permanent reminders of the sacrifices made to preserve our freedom. He said, "This information board by the side of the now peaceful Oxdrove Way will tell the story of three brave young men, and despite being not quite finished, has already aroused considerable interest." He added, "We look forward to being able to hold a COVID-compliant dedication service soon and are grateful for contributions from Itchenstoke Parish Council, Winchester City Council, individuals and the help of the Grange Estate that have made this project possible. The final touch will be the standing surface, which remains to be applied." And there's a picture of the memorial in a little fenced enclosure, beautiful views over the valley where the tragic accident occurred.
Shock at sudden death of QC, aged 54. Tributes have been paid to a highly regarded barrister who died suddenly while defending in a murder trial at Winchester Crown Court. Matthew Jewell, QC, died on April the 10th, aged 54. And now tributes are flooding in for the wonderful friend and colleague. Mr. Jewell was called to the bar in 1989 and was appointed Queen's Counsel in 2018. He was a very well-known and liked face on the Western Circuit, including courts in Hampshire, such as Winchester. In tribute, colleague Karim Khalil, QC, said, "Matthew was a pupil in One Paper Buildings and remained with us for his entire career, helping me to steer the merger with Dyers to become Drystone Chambers 6 years ago. He was on our management and finance committees and was a calm voice of reason when others occasionally lost their heads over the many different issues that confront life at the bar. He was primarily a Western Circuiteer, but he was in demand elsewhere, often working on the Southeastern and Midland circuits, leading members of chambers in serious cases. He's a huge loss to us as a friend and colleague, and to the bar as a proper barrister, imbued with good judgment, quiet assurance, and a firm grasp of the importance of litigating with style." He added that Mr. Jewell is hugely missed already. Also paying tribute, James Newton Price QC, Kate Lumsden QC, and Adam Feast QC. They said, "We loved Matthew as a friend and admired him as a colleague and were stunned by his sudden and untimely death. He was a star on the Western Circuit because he made courtroom advocacy look effortless while fearlessly fighting for his case. We have known Matthew for over 25 years. Matthew was always his usual charming, relaxed and affable self. He was by nature protective of younger and less experienced barristers. He also had a sharp sense of humour and would have been amused to read the many tributes to him. At the time of his death, Mr. Jewell was defence counsel for Charlie Statham in the trial at Winchester Crown Court for the murder of Gundarajit Rai in Corehampton in July 2019.
37,000 take part in the RSPB Birdwatch in the county. The number of nature lovers who took part in the RSPB's Big Garden Birdwatch soared to 1 million people this winter after a year of lockdown restrictions saw people turn to nature for comfort. The Big Garden Birdwatch is a chance for people to count the number of birds in their garden. This year, over 1 million people across the country took part, counting 17 million birds, with over 37,000 people taking part in Hampshire. Hopes were raised for a bumper participation year after results from a YouGov survey revealed the pandemic is making the public more aware of nature in their local area, with 41% seeing wildlife near their homes over the last 12 months that they'd never noticed before. Becky Spate, RSPB Chief Executive, said, "We've been blown away by the enthusiasm with which people have taken part in the Birdwatch this year."
Golfers hopeful for club's future. Members of South Winchester Golf Club are keeping positive amidst fears that a large-scale development is on its way. Residents and campaigners believe the course could soon become a new town featuring around 1,000 homes. But club captain Ray Hallett said that the strong membership has high hopes. Ray, who lives in Ampfield but has been a member for 11 years, told the Chronicle, "We know that a land survey has been carried out and us members had a message from the CEO of Crown Golf, Stephen Towers, to say that it was conducted whilst the course was closed to not disrupt members. It has been clear that the land is on the City Council's SHELAA list. This is not new news. The members do not own the club and it's run on a corporate basis, so this has always been a possibility. But Crown has invested in the strength of membership over the last 27 years and we are keeping fairly sanguine about it all. At the same time, it will be a really sad day if the club is ever built on." Save South Winchester Campaign Group, which is also battling the Royal Down scheme, sparked fear in the local community after finding a Bloor Homes leaflet left by contractors. In 2019, Bloor Homes developed Basingstoke Golf Course into a housing estate. "It would be a shame to lose the club, of course, and we aren't happy about the uncertainty, but have always been realistic," said Mr. Hallett. Last year, the firm announced that it had evolved from purely a golf course business into a property development company. In 2020, it flogged 7 of its courses after partnering with Jason Mills Boutique Property Development and Investment Company, Sequoia Real Estate. The most recent sale was Merrist Wood Golf Club in Surrey. But Mr. Hallett said the other sites were on leaseholds and that the only viable option for Crown was to sell. South Winchester Golf Club has a contract with until 2026, meaning it cannot be developed on until at least then. Mr. Hallett said if an application was put forward, there would be severe opposition and it would take years for anything to progress. Just look at other sites in Winchester, like Barton Farm. "There's not a lot we can do ourselves, but I want my club to be there for years to come. No one is happy. And there has been so much speculation over the last 20 years that the idea of development has been hanging over our heads like a cloud. South Winchester Golf Club is relatively young, having opened in 1993.
New home is approved despite traffic issues. Planning chiefs reluctantly approved a new home in Compton Down despite fears it would increase traffic issues. A plan for a 3-bedroom house in the garden of Plover Hill, Field Way, went before the City Council's Planning Committee. The application drew a number of objections, particularly from the Compton Down Society and the Parish Council. Parish Council representative, Councillor Francis Strange, said, "The existing road network on Compton Down is privately owned by the Chamberlain Estate and is not built for heavy vehicular use. There will be a cumulative effect from extra traffic movements, together with the effect of contractors' traffic in the short term." The traffic impact assessment in support of the planning application states, "An additional infill dwelling will not cause demonstrable harm to highway safety, directly contradicts all previous highways and appeal inspectors' opinions." His notion was backed by Ray Alborough, Hampshire County Council Highways Officer, and added that there is a minimal risk of increased traffic issues from this development. He also advised that if councillors rejected the application, citing traffic reasons, it would be impossible to fight on appeal as Highways is not objecting to the plan. Councillor Jane Rutter said, "This isn't an easy one because I know how concerned the Parish Council and the Local Residents Association are about the impact of yet more housing, but we have to face the facts. And the facts are that the Highways Authority is saying there is not sufficient harm caused by the potential of more traffic from this development to warrant a refusal on the basis of highways concerns. Therefore, we're not in a position to object on those grounds. And Councillor Brian Laming said, "This is a very difficult one to decide. We have an area here where we've got large houses on large plots, and that's the character of the area. From what I see, this particular development is quite well thought out, with the exception of the drive." The application was unanimously granted planning permission by councillors.
Treasures found on housing site. Bronze Age treasure has been unearthed at a Hampshire housing development. A metal detectorist stumbled upon a hoard of ancient treasure on a piece of land earmarked for housing. Armbands, an axe, knife and spear tip were all found on site in Porchester. The artefacts date from the Middle Bronze Age, with the British Bronze Age spanning from around 2500 BC until 800 BC. The find was declared treasure under the Treasure Act 1996 and examined by experts at the British Museum. It consists of two Lys arm rings, an unlooped palstave axe, a quoit-headed pin, a knife razor fragment and a fragment of a spear tip. The finds were located by a metal detectorist on land at Persimmons Harbourside View development at Porchester. A metal detectorist found the items on land north of Cranley Road, where Persimmon Homes has built 120 new homes at its Harbourside View development. The British Museum has since praised the developer for waiving its right to a reward for this treasure and donating the historical find to the Hampshire Cultural Trust in Winchester. Managing Director of Persimmon Homes, Matt Payne, said archaeological surveys are often undertaken as part of the routine preparation for a new home's development, but it is highly unusual and very exciting when something as special as this Bronze Age hoard is discovered on our land. We were thrilled to be able to support Hampshire Cultural Trust and ensure these important artefacts remain in the county. And there are photographs of these items, and they are that wonderful greeny-blue hue that bronze gets, having been buried for 3,500 years. No, more than that, five. Very long time.
Cycle route to link up England's cathedrals. All 42 Church of England cathedrals are set to be linked by a new 2,000-mile loop cycle route. The route, which will run from Newcastle to Truro, will be launched with a relay ride from Newcastle Cathedral to coincide with the world's biggest bike ride on Sunday, May the 30th. Salisbury and Winchester will be linked and cyclists will head from Salisbury to Exeter. It's all thanks to a unique partnership between the Association of English Cathedrals, the British Pilgrimage Trust, Cycling UK and Sustrans in a new initiative to promote greener travel and mental and physical well-being. Excuse me. The 2,000-mile cathedrals cycle route is the invention of academic, entrepreneur and keen cyclist Sean Cutler from Northumbria University, and is designed to help us all out of lockdown with opportunities for short cycle rides between cathedrals. Sean will launch the route on May the 30th in Newcastle. He's worked with Newcastle Cathedral, the British Pilgrimage Trust, Cycling UK and Sustrans to design the 42 linked routes. He said, "The cathedral's cycle route is about connecting our historic cathedrals and enjoying the spaces between them. Now more than ever, after a year of living with the coronavirus pandemic, this is a way to support people's mental and physical health and promote the mission of England's cathedrals through pilgrimage, well-being and heritage." The relay ride will transport a specially commissioned baton, Olympic torch style, around the whole route, passing along to different groups of cyclists at each cathedral who can join the ride for as little or as long as they like, with a group returning 42 days later, weather permitting, having cycled every Church of England cathedral. The relay ride will raise money for Cycling UK's Break the Cycle appeal, which aims to help improve people's well-being through the charity's aim to create a healthier, happier and cleaner world, because more people cycle. It's hoped that the relay ride will become an annual event and will encourage more people to get on their bikes over the next few years. Each cathedral aims to have a dedicated cycle champion to improve the cycle readiness of their buildings, ensure a warm welcome for visiting cyclists, and increase the number who arrive on two wheels, which is currently around 5%. It's also an opportunity for cathedrals to find new partnerships and promote mental and physical well-being.
Artist says thank you to NHS with latest mural at hospital. A Banksy-style artwork has appeared on a wall at Winchester Hospital. The work by local artist Hendog was painted overnight on Thursday at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. It shows a young child handing a bunch of flowers to an NHS key worker. A post on Hendog's Instagram page said, "To all NHS staff, thank you so much for everything you do. Where would our country be without you?" Following the discovery of the artwork, Hampshire Hospital's chief nurse, Julie Dawes, said, "Imagine our surprise when our staff walked in this morning and saw this beautiful picture on the wall. I would just like to say a really big thank you to the artist Hendog, who has done this for us overnight, and it is very much appreciated and has put a smile on our staff's faces." It is the third mural from the artist, who has been dubbed the Winchester Banksy, which has popped up in the city over the last couple of months. The others are in Garnier Road and Winnell, and there is a photograph of the chief nurse, Julie Dawes, alongside the artwork, which, interestingly, he's painted on a brick wall rather than a white wall, and I would have thought that would be very difficult to do. Plus, it's actually in monochrome and basically black and white and grey, which is interesting, but very nice thought.
Train guards' dispute is over. Railway workers have accepted a deal to end a long-running dispute over guards on trains. The three-year dispute has regularly disrupted journeys between Winchester and London Waterloo. Members of the Rail, Maritime and Transport Union, the RMT, on South Western Railway voted to back an agreement which draws to a close one of the longest-running industrial disputes in decades. It focused on the role of guards on trains with South Western Railway, saying it wanted to run trains without guards, in which drivers operated the doors. Winchester MP Steve Bryan, a regular rail commuter, said, "This is seriously good news for my constituents. Compromise is not a dirty word, as someone once said, so well done to both sides for making it work." The union said it has secured a guarantee of a guard on all trains.
Don't forget nature as city life returns. These photos by our camera club show the beautiful nature that Hampshire has to offer. The country is coming back to life with the shops, pubs and restaurants reopening, but environmentalists are urging people to keep up the connection they have established with nature during lockdown, whilst there was nothing else to do. How could you ditch our stunning countryside? Those interested in joining the club can do so at www.facebook.com. It's quite a complicated number. I'm not going to read it out, the rest of it. Photos posted here may be used in the Hampshire Chronicle and its respective publications, websites and social media channels. By posting pictures, you give consent for publication. I'm just going to describe the photographs, really, because they're really beautiful. There's one of a sparrowhawk, not my favourite bird, but they are very beautiful, with their faintly speckled chests and grey backs, and one of a tree creeper facing the right way up, because quite often they are going quite the other direction, facing down, and quite rare to see, and just some early bluebells beginning to come out, not in a great mass yet, and a view of the Stockbridge Downs, archetypal English countryside view, and what looks like a strange mess of roots and is actually gunnera beginning to unfurl its leaves, which I think are an extraordinary plant. Just the beginnings of them, and then the size that they end up is very impressive. And then there's one here of a snowstorm, which, if I'm honest, just looks like a really bad picture because it's just speckly, so you don't really realise it's snow. It's just a mess. And we have a drake who is just had obviously had a ruffle and is flapping his wings and shaking himself out as he's got out of the water. And finally, headed spring at Hinton Ampner, and I would say they're pheasant eye daffodils, although I think they're not really out yet because they come much later. But a very sweet, simple white flower with a tiny orange-tinged centre. England at its best in the spring.
Thank you. Nice description. Music has helped many endure the lockdowns. Music has helped listeners in the UK get through the pandemic-enforced lockdowns, new research has suggested. More than a quarter of those surveyed said they had increased their listening time compared to before the country shut down, according to a survey from the British phonographic industry. Only 11% of those asked said they listened to less or no music at all, and a jump in consumption was most pronounced in the 16 to 24 age group. The British phonographic industry, BPI, the UK Record Labels Association, said 45% of respondents in this age group listened to more music since the first national lockdown in March last year. And the survey suggested people relied on their favourite songs for a boost while separated from their friends and loved ones. Half of those asked said they listened to music for a lift, whilst 42% cited its ability to aid sleep or relaxation. For the 60% of respondents who reported weekly feelings of anxiety, more than half, 55%, said music helped ease those feelings. Those asked also said listening to their favourite songs helped them feel a sense of escape from their problems, while 78% said it made them feel more motivated. Songs are a way to alleviate boredom, according to 40% of respondents, and 27% used music to improve concentration when working or studying. And a quarter said music is the ideal accompaniment to exercise. Jeff Taylor, chief executive of the BPI, Brit Awards and Mercury Prize, said, "Music has many intrinsic additional benefits, not least in raising spirits and promoting well-being. But this new research underscores just how much of a lifeline it's been for people since lockdown, inspiring and reassuring us, and also helping many of us to work, study and exercise to greater effect. The transformational power of music to improve lives has rarely been more pronounced."
Airport runway campaigners pledge to fight on. Campaigners who objected to the controversial plans to expand the runway at Southampton Airport have pledged to fight on. In a statement released after Eastleigh Borough Council's decision to approve plans to expand the runway by 164 metres, members of Airport Expansion Opposition said, "Today's decision is by no means the end of the matter. It is completely wrong, not only in principle, but also in the way it was reached. We should be taking advice as to our options for future action." They said the decision is contrary to the wishes of Eastleigh's neighbours in Southampton and Winchester. They added, "This is a bleak day for local people and everyone who cares about our environment, but it is just a setback in the transition to a sustainable future. We thank those councillors who gave proper weight to noise, pollution and the climate emergency." It comes as 22 councillors voted in favour of the expansion and 13 against it. As previously reported, planning officers recommended for the plans to be approved. A statement from Extinction Rebellion's Winchester regarding Eastleigh Borough Council's decision to allow Southampton's expansion. "We are dismayed by the vote to expand Southampton Airport last night. Councillors voted 22 to 13 in favour of extending the airport runway to allow larger aircraft access. This decision was made in the face of a multitude of facts that this will be detrimental to the health of residents in Eastleigh, Winchester and Southampton. This is not to mention the catastrophic and accelerating impact decisions like this have on climate change. By their actions, many local politicians, businesses and organisations have shown their true colours when it comes to the climate emergency we all face and to local residents' health and well-being. The decision will mean that larger and thus noisier aircraft will be using the incoming flight path to the north of the airport, which flies over the villages such as Twyford and Coldon Common. The airport's expansion plans have had significant opposition, not just from environmental campaigners, but from residents. Yet again, many of our local elected officials have abdicated their responsibility to do the right thing. But we are hopeful that this decision will be paused by the government."
Officers are hurt, says police chief. Hampshire Police Federation chairman has said it's been difficult to hear the level of criticism on officers after a tough few weeks in which they've not had the support they deserve. Zoe Wakefield also added that officers across the country are hurting after they've been criticised for how they police the Sarah Everard vigil. A blog post on Hampshire Police Federation website said politicians and the media have criticised officers for how they policed the Sarah Everard vigil, while many have taken to social media to fan the flames around the Bristol Kill the Bill protests. She added that it's been particularly difficult to hear the level of criticism from the government and senior MPs. She said, "It's definitely been a tough time, and I think the first few days, particularly after the protest at Clapham, officers were feeling really low, just feeling like they're constantly getting a kicking from the media. Then when you've got MPs joining in, it does feel like we're damned if we do, damned if we don't. The feeling is we're society's punch bag, and not to have the support from MPs is really hurtful, particularly when they're making judgments on a short video clip that's been put on social media before the full facts are known." As those facts became clear, with over 40 officers injured in the Bristol protests, Zoe said MPs' views began to shift, but it shouldn't take police vans being set on fire to get the backing and support officers need. She said, "As the days went on following Clapham Common, more came out about what actually happened, and there was a bit of a change."
Work ongoing despite settled legal matters. The industrial-scale development of a Mian Valley meadow is still angering local residents despite legal proceedings being settled. Winchester City Council refused an application for retrospective permission for the site access works at the Dradfield Lane, Soberton. Discussions are ongoing with the site owner, Nick Butler, to find an acceptable solution more fitting with a countryside location. But local resident Angus McCulloch says that the work is ongoing. In a letter to the City Council, he wrote, "There have been multiple deliveries of very large quantities of building materials and an extended hard standing or road running down the centre of the site is being laid. Work laying the rubble to create a wide strip down the centre of the field is continuing, including over this weekend with a digger and dumper truck in constant operation. I believe that I'm not the only local resident to have brought these continuing works to the council's attention. As far as I'm aware, no enforcement action has been taken in relation to the enlarged gateway since the owner's appeal against the refusal of retrospective planning permission was dismissed. That enlarged entrance continues to be used for deliveries of lorry loads of building materials." Mr. Butler also appealed against an enforcement notice issued by the council in relation to the alleged unauthorised use of land for the storage of non-agricultural mobile units. The planning inspectorate decided to allow this appeal and to overturn the enforcement notice as it considered that the alleged unauthorised use of the land had not taken place. Mr. McCulloch said that on the matter, no action has been taken to follow up the inspector's observation that the containers on the site, even if having an agricultural purpose, may constitute a breach of planning control. No action has been taken, whether by a site visit or otherwise, in relation to the reports to the council of continuing, apparently non-permitted development that has redoubled in activity since the inspector's decisions. The Chronicle asked Winchester City Council to explain what officers are planning. Winchester City Council refused an application for planning permission for the site access works at Dradfield Lane, Soberton, said a spokesperson. An appeal against this refusal by the site owner has been dismissed by the planning inspectorate. Discussions are ongoing with the site owner towards finding an acceptable solution for the site entrance, more fitting with a countryside location.
And finally, the Easter Bunny arrives to hospices by chopper. Children attending Naomi House and Jack's Place in Sutton Scotney were given a surprise visit this Easter. The Easter Bunny made a special trip to the local hospices for children and young adults and flew in by helicopter to deliver a whole load of Easter eggs for the children to enjoy. The visit and flight were made and organised by the Gazelle Squadron display team. This unique event with the Easter Bunny is part of a programme of activities that create memorable moments for the life-limited and life-threatened youngsters who visit the hospices. Hugh Bromage, the activities team leader at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "It was a real treat for the children to see the Easter Bunny appear from a helicopter in the Naomi House garden, and we're grateful for the chocolatey goodies the Easter Bunny brought along too. Events like these create special memories for all the children, young adults and the families who use our services." And there's a lovely picture of, well, it looks like a sort of a maypole arrangement in the garden with the Easter Bunny in front of some of the children, the young adults, and indeed some of the carers with them. And somebody's holding up a huge bag of chocolate Easter eggs. That sounds good. So that concludes the extracts for this week. And thank you to our editors, copying and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our reader, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.